It's 11:05 in Chicagoland. Time now to Speak On Sports with Bob Elson. LTD Radio takes you to the Northwest Federal Savings Building in the lobby on Irving Park Road, just one block west of Cicero in Chicago, where Bob Elson will recap the weekend. Speak Out on Sports. Bob?
Thank you, Skip. And good morning, everybody. We're set for our usual Saturday morning show here in the lobby of Northwest Federal. And we have an old friend of mine here today, and he'll be with us in a couple of minutes. One of the great pitchers of all time, Bob Feller. I broadcast some of the greatest games this fellow ever pitched. I'll never forget him, and he looks today like he could go out and throw nine innings this afternoon. Anyway, Bob Feller is here, and we're delighted to have him, and he'll be with us in just a moment. Now, the British Open ends today, and those guys are shooting phenomenal golf over there. Johnny Miller, an American, is two strokes back, and Bobby Cole now leads. As you know, he shot a 65 yesterday. You wonder how these guys can do it, but they do. The Sox beat the Brewers last night, and the Cubs came back nicely to beat the Giants, and they'll be in action today at Wrigley Field and again tomorrow. And then the All-Star game will be played on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to that. I can remember All-Star games that I announced that Bob Feller worked in, and we'll talk about that. And he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. You know, it's Northwest Federal Savings 50th anniversary, and we're celebrating with a carnival of gifts for you. Choose one free or at a greatly reduced price by saving $250 or more. Hop on the free gift merry-go-round. You'll find Thermos picnic jugs, Mr. Coffee, the new Presto Minute Burger, an electric ice cream maker just for starters. It's the biggest, most exciting selection ever at Northwest Federal Savings. And a special 50th anniversary bonus, a $50 deposit gets you a famous Kahn guitar for just $30 with four fun-filled group lessons tossed in free. The lessons to be given here at Northwest Federal Savings by professional guitar teachers from Lyon and Healy. And while all this is going on, remember, your savings are earning the highest interest rates allowed by law. A super sensational summer for you at Northwest Federal Savings. Now celebrating the grand opening of its newest savings center at Golf and Algonquin in Arlington Heights. And remember, they're open 63 hours a week.
It's Northwest Federal Savings time, 63 hours a week.
Well, I'd say that I've enjoyed over the years all the famous people that we've had out here at Northwest Federal, including Cup, who was here last week. But today, Feller gives me a personal feeling of pleasure to have Bob Feller as a guest because I was around broadcasting baseball when Bob Feller came into the big leagues. And the one thing that I recall that people in my end of the business used to say about Feller was, when he was making $7,000 or $8,000, he didn't change any when he was making 10 or 12 times that much. He was always accessible. He was always pleasant. And Bob, you do look in really great shape. The Cubs could use you.
Well, I feel very good and down to my playing weight. Enjoying being with you, Bob, of course, and reminiscing as well as being back in Chicago where I had some of my greatest games here at Comiskey Park, and of course I have always been an American leaguer, and most of the players that I associated with naturally were American leaguers, except in the All-Star game and a couple of World Series. But actually, I was a Cub fan when I was a kid back on a farm in Iowa, and you used to listen to all those Cub games with Hornsby and Charlie Grimm and Kai Kai Kyler and Rick Stevenson and Gabby Hartnett and Billy Jurgis, who I saw just the other day, and had a lot of fun. My dad was a great fan also. We listened to all the Cub games, and they could pull them in out there better than any others, even St. Louis, which was a little closer.
Well, I'm happy you were listening because I was doing the Cubs in those days.
I'm glad you said that, Bob. I didn't.
You know, they tell a story. It's a nice-sounding story, even if it isn't true. They say that back on the farm in Van Meter, Iowa, your father'd stand a distance away, and he had a tire there, and you threw the ball through the tire to practice control. Is there anything to that?
Well, that's exactly about right, Bob, except I think I was a complete failure as far as the control goes, because I'm looking at some scraps scrapbook here. It said I struck out 17 one day, walked 9, hit 1, made 1 wild pitch, and I think the game took about forever to be played. I allowed only 2 hits and won the ball game, but my dad usually played catch with me, and all fastball pitchers that throw hard, have a lot of body motion and a big windup like I have a tendency to be very wild, and that includes, of course, presently Nolan Ryan. Koufax was the same way, even Walter Johnson earlier, but usually fastball pitchers have to put a lot of body motion and a lot of physical effort and into their delivery, and you can't be a dart thrower, and speed and control don't exactly go together. It has to be developed.
Yes. Bob Feller, what did you think about the year that Turley and his partner started to pitch with no windup?
I think that was started because of Don Larson, who pitched that no-hitter and the perfect game in the World Series. Pitchers that do not have very many different pitches, like curves and sinkers, change-ups and sliders and so forth, he can get by without a windup because it doesn't have much to do with what the hitter is looking for. He's always looking for the fastball, and no matter what kind of a windup, whether it's a one or a two pump handle or not at all, just take the ball and throw it. It doesn't disconcert the hitter at all. However, I think a good windup, if an ordinary pitcher like myself with different pitches like they have, is an advantage. However, you do have to practice pitching with men on base because half your career is consumed by pitching with men on base. And many a pitcher can pitch great with taking a windup or without men on base. But pitching with men on base, they lose a considerable amount of stuff. Particular pitching to hitters hitting on the opposite side of the plate. It took me about 3 years to learn how to pitch to left-hand hitters with as much effectiveness as it did to right-handers. And I became just as effective, I believe, as against the left-handers and right-handers, generally speaking. But to answer the question, I believe in a windup. It might be a little easier, might not make you perspire quite as much on a hot day, but I don't think the energy it conserves is worth the benefit that's involved in taking a regular windup like I took.
Well, I believe it, and I remember Dizzy Dean and the great windup he took, and also your windup. And one of the advantages or disadvantages for the hitter, with all that motion, he doesn't know where the ball's coming from.
That's right. You can throw sidearm or three-quarters or overhand. You can change your delivery like Satchel Paige does, more or less of a, without men on base, of course. The hesitation pitch, and Satchel, of course, is one of the great windup artists of all time, Bobo Newsom, and I just sincerely believe in it, the same as I believe in it. You catch every ball you can, with the exception of maybe of a first baseman or catcher, with both hands, so you can get rid of the ball, get the seams on the tip of your fingers. And when I have a baseball clinic, I advise all these youngsters to try to get both hands on every ball they can. They can get rid of it quicker. They can turn it over and get a hold of the seam where it'll carry, and it'll travel farther and straighter with more accuracy. And I may be wrong, but I sincerely believe in it.
You, speaking of Satchel Paige, who you recall as well as I do, I remember broadcasting a game at White Sox Park when they turned 10,000 people away. Were you there that night?
That was in 1948, the year we won the pennant in the World Series, and Satchel pitched a game. He won the game, I believe, 1-0, and they turned him away in droves. They almost had a riot.
They tipped a streetcar over out on 35th Street.
The people were very disgusted. They all wanted to see Satchel pitch, and it was almost a riot, trying to get in the ballpark, breaking the gates down or getting in any way they could. He won the game. It was a tremendous boost. Satchel was a great pitcher. In fact, I just pitched against Satch in a couple of old-timers games this summer and down in Louisiana, in Alexandria and Lafayette in the Texas League. And he's still out there at the age of 71 with his Indian uniform on, enjoying the nostalgia.
That's great. Now, Bob, there always was argument when Satchel Paige pitched, when he had that hesitation, when he brought his arms up and stopped momentarily up on the top of his cap. What about that?
Well, with men on base, of course, he couldn't do it. It was a balk. In fact, Satchel would stand out there on the rubber with men on base and his ball in his glove, ready to take his stretch. He'd wiggle his fingers on his glove a couple of times, and that's actually a balk. Satchel got by with quite a few things because of his previous training in the National Colored League with the Kansas City Monarch, the Homestead Grays, etc. But he didn't cheat, such as doctoring the ball by any foreign substance. He just had a few motions out there that made the hitters a little bit skeptical, and of course it did increase his effectiveness. But he's a great pitcher with fine control, a real competitor, and he really loves the game. He's still talking it, and I think Satch, of course, was one of the greatest pitchers in baseball. How great he would have been if he trained like a major leaguer and had the facilities, we'll never know.
Yeah.
By the way, have you ever been able to figure out, and I know you've seen him in the park and you've watched him on television, where does Gaylord Perry get the Vaseline from?
I don't know what Gaylord throws, but some of those pitches he makes go up there and they drop out of sight. I couldn't do it. Gaylord evidently must have some secret that nobody really knows, but it's a great pitch if you can get by with it. Of course, he hasn't been getting by with it lately, and of course, at Gaylord's age, he's probably losing his little bit of his consistency. When you get into your middle 30s and beyond, why, your fastball is not good 9 times out of 10. It might be 7 or 5 times out of 10, and you don't go out there with your great stuff 9 times out of 10 when you pitch. It gradually, the old elasticity in the old whip is like a rubber band. It begins to deteriorate, but Gaylord's a great pitcher with or without the Vaseline or with the loaded baseball, and I think a lot of it is psychology. Like Bertie Grimes used to always fake his spitter, probably only throw a couple a game, but the hitters always thought he was throwing it.
That's right. By the way, we know that they were both great hitters, but what did you try to do with Williams versus DiMaggio?
Well, I'd say Ted was the greatest hitter of my time, and I pitched against some pretty good ones, including Rogers Hornsby and Lou Gehrig. I never pitched against Ruth. He retired a year before I came up. Williams could hit anybody. He was a dead low ball hitter when he first came to the league. But a couple of years, Ted began to hit the high fastball as well. You couldn't throw a ball by him. He might miss it occasionally, and I try to hit him on the fist with sliders and try to pitch him high to make him hit the ball in the air, try to keep it inside the park, which I wasn't always successful at. Ted could hit anybody in his prime. Of course, he missed 4.5 years because of 2 wars. DiMaggio hit me better than Ted. DiMaggio was the only right-hand hitter that consistently gave me a lot of trouble, and by the time I had it all figured out, I had to pitch him about a foot inside the plate and keep pushing him back. I kept the ball out over the plate. He kept wearing me out. By the time I really knew how to pitch him, he retired in 1951. He's the greatest ball player I ever saw in the American League, and probably never saw him with grass on his uniform. From sliding, catching a ball, he called him knee high, but, Hornsby was the best right hand hitter I ever pitched to, and Ted, the greatest left hand hitter, and I think the greatest hitter of all time that could swing with power and hit the long ball and never let up. I don't think any pitcher had his number.
No. I agree with you. Boy, you just mentioned 2 marvelous, marvelous hitters. Hornsby hit over 400 4 times, and that was in the era of the dead ball, which is remarkable.
Yes, of course, you didn't have a time at bat when you drove a man in with a fly ball from third base. That was an advantage. They changed it around. However, he could still hit over 400, I'm sure of that. He had a lot of power to right to center. He always believed in hitting the ball through the box, which was always rather disconcerting to a pitcher. And he could, right center and left center with his power. He said way back in the far corner of the box. And those kind of fellows, I always preferred to have somebody stand close to the plate. The one that stood back in the box, like Bo Bell, and he came up with the Browns, and he had a Hornsby stance, were very difficult for a pitcher to figure out just how to pitch to him because they had a choice of trying to cover the outside corner or the inside corner of the plate. But Hornsby had a great eye. He was not exactly a great personality as far as public relations goes. He might get slugged by Dale Carnegie if you ever met him. But I like Rog, and I always, he was my hero. I always used a Roger Hornsby glove, and I used a Rogers Hornsby bat, but I could never hit or field like him.
He was a remarkable. When you talk about hitters, where they stand, I wouldn't blame a hitter for not wanting to stand too close to the plate with you throwing that fastball.
Well, the first hitter I ever pitched to in an exhibition game when I came right out of high school to Cleveland was Leo DeRocher, and the first 2 pitches I made to Leo in this exhibition game against the Gas House gang, the first pitch almost in the press box, the next one was behind him, and the umpire said, "Leo, you're standing too close to the plate, the kid's allowed to put the next one in your ear." Of course, the funny part of it was, the next 2 pitches were strikes, and Leo ran to the dugout and hid behind the bat rack. He said, "Hey kid, you can't hit me here. They call me Fellows." And, of course, Dizzy Dean and Frankie Frisch and Paul and Pepper Martin and Joe Medwick and Rip Collins, all those great Cardinal Gas House gangers were laughing like crazy in the dugout, and everybody was laughing at Leo. So Hubbard, the umpire, said, "Get back here. You got another strike coming." And from behind a water cooler where Leo was hiding now, he said, "You take the third one, Cal. I'm going to stay here.
I can believe that. Our guest today is one of the great pitchers of all time and one of my very close personal friends from my years in baseball, Bob Feller. We'll be back with Bob in just a moment. Here's some exciting news for all of you friends in the great Northwest Territory. Northwest Federal Savings is now celebrating the grand opening of a new branch office in the Surrey Ridge Shopping Center at Algonquin and Golf Roads in Arlington Heights. Now, this means that all of you friends living in Arlington Heights, Rolling Meadows, Elk Grove Village, Schaumburg, and Mount Prospect can now enjoy all of Northwest Federal's outstanding services and security in another new and convenient location. Take advantage of Northwest Federal's 50th anniversary Cardinal of Gifts office at the Arlington Heights office, too. Stop in to enter the 1925 Newsmaker Matchup Sweepstakes at the new branch office. You could also win an all-expense-paid vacation for two to Hawaii or one of 50 other prizes. All Northwest Federal savers and borrowers can now transact business at the new office without starting new accounts. An online computer system automatically records transactions in all locations. Come out and celebrate with us. The new Algonquin Golf Savings Center is open 63 hours a week for your convenience. Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5
p.m. Northwest Federal Savings Time, 63 hours a week.
Bob Feller, one of the great pitchers of all time, is our guest. Bob, were you surprised the other day when the new manager of the Cleveland Indians, Frank Robinson, rated publicly in the newspapers the umpires?
I was very disappointed in Frank rating publicly the umpires. If I were the umpires, I might write publicly some of the managers. It's their will to do it. I think it's not only very discouraging for the Cleveland fans, which I, of course, am playing with Cleveland for over 20 years. I think it's not very smart, and I think it's going to cause him, he's going to regret this for a long, long time to come. This is a very thoughtless procedure, and it might have a lot to do with his career as a manager in the major leagues, incidentally, which won't be good.
Bob Feller, you pitched against many times against one of my favorite guys, Hal Newhouser.
Oh, Hal is a great fellow, of course. He's also in the banking business over in Dearborn, Michigan, and Hal and I had some great battles together. They'd usually pitch us on Sunday and draw a big crowd in Cleveland, Detroit. Hal won 29 games 1 year. I think he won, I know he won 27 another and won 26 and helped the club win the pennant in the World Series in 1945. And it was my pleasure to be a teammate of Hal's when he came to Cleveland in 1954. And he wound up his career with the Cleveland uniform on in 1955. That was the year we won 154. We won 111 games. Incidentally, lost four straight in the World Series to the Giants, which neither Hal nor I pitched in.
I remember that. I really never forgave Al Lopez for not starting you in one of those games and not starting Billy Pierce in one of the games in 1959 when the White Sox won the pennant because you fellas were his meal tickets.
Well, I won 13, lost 3, and saved about 15 that year in relief. Hal, he had 6-1 and did some relief pitching, but Bob Lemon had a great year. He pitched two games in that series and lost both of them. The opening game was a tough extra inning game with Rhodes getting a home run in Polo Grounds. Early win, lost a tough ball game, a 3-1 game, and of course Garcia lost and Bob didn't have his stuff. Bob could not pitch with 2 days rest, but of course Al had a tough series. He's a great manager and a real personal friend of mine. He brought the pennant, of course, to the White Sox in 59, and I saw that series here in Chicago at Comiskey Park, and Duke Snider in the sixth game hit the home run that started the White Sox down for their loss in the six-game series. But Al's a very fine manager, a great percentage manager, too.
You know, we get a lot of questions on my GN show. Tomorrow we're going to have a big baseball show from 4 to 6, and you're going to be on it, as well as many other Hall of Famers. But this question is called in by more fans than any other. Are the Cub ball players at a disadvantage because they play half their games in daylight, and then when they go on the road, they're under the lights? Now, I really am not qualified to answer that question, but you are.
I don't really think so. I doubt it very much. If they are, I know that it may have some effect on certain players, but generally speaking, I don't think that's that much a difference the way the lights are today. I don't believe there is any answer to that question. I do know in Yankee Stadium and other ballparks that have bad backgrounds, the visiting ball clubs, visiting hitters, do have a tough time of adjusting to it. Like when the visiting team used to come to Yankee Stadium, they'd take down the screen out there by the monuments and the flagpole with the white shirts in the outfield. It was very difficult to see on a bright, sunshiny day. But that's a question which never came up before, except only one thing I know. If the Cubs win the pennant and they have the World Series here in the daytime, what's the commissioner going to say to NBC? You're going to lose about 10 million people of a TV audience. No, but I'm a real Cub. I think the Cubs deserve a pennant here. They certainly do. They worked so hard and so long and haven't had much luck for several years, of course. And the answer to that question, I'm not qualified. I don't know. I played a lot of day ball. In fact, I pitched the first game in the American League at night in Cleveland in 1939 for the Indians against Detroit. And a few other firsts in the American League like St. Louis and a couple other cities. But it probably has certain effects on your living habits and so forth. But I don't think that's an excuse for not being winning ball games.
Well, feller, I pitched. That'd have been something. You go up and broadcast, and I do the pitching. I pitched one of the greatest games that you ever worked, and that was right here in Chicago, a no-hitter opening day, right?
Yes, the only no-hitter ever pitched in Major Leagues in baseball history. It was a cold day, Bob, as you remember. Everybody had their overcoats on about, but the fellas in uniform out there on the field. I didn't have great stuff that day. I think I only struck out 8 and walked 4 or 5. And the one game wound up with a very tough play at first base. My second baseman, Ray Mack, fielded the ball back on the grass, way to his left, turned completely around and threw to first back base to get the toughest hitter in the league at that time, Taft right at first base on a very close play. And Raleigh Hemsley, my catcher, drove in a winning run with a triple. And I never forget that ball game. It was my first no-hitter. My dad and mother were here to see it.
Yeah, that was a wonderful day. You know, besides the work that you do for the Hilton Hotel Corporation, a fine company, we see you, and I've been trying to figure out why you look like you're 28 or 29. I know that you're much younger than I am, but I see these ads about Grecian formula, and all of a sudden I look up, and here's Feller looking like he looked back in 1940. What is it?
Well, I have baseball clinics all over the country in the summer to the minor leagues and the little leaguers and so forth, and I wanted to relate to them. My hair was white, Bob, and I started using Grecian formula, and the owner of the company, Mr. Combe, heard about it. Being from Iowa, he got a hold of me, and my wife, Ann, and I, we do the commercials for him on TV. So the Grecian formula has made my hair more natural, and I do look young, and I don't know if it's going to affect my arm any, but I certainly relate to the youngsters a great deal more. And I go out there in a mound in uniform, and I still throw pretty good in these, what we used to call old-timers games, are now stars of the past games.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you mentioned Roger Hornsby before, who was a very, very interesting gentleman. I had him on my show many, many, many times. He was a very blunt guy. I'll never forget one night that Marv Rotblatt, remember Marv?
I remember Marv, yes.
He started against a team, and he got hit pretty hard in a night game at Sox Park, and Hornsby was coming by the booth. So he stopped in, so I said, well, Raj, what about the game? What'd you think of Rotblatt? He says, well, Bob, I'm going to be honest with you. They could turn the lights off, and I'd get 5 for 5 off them.
Well, I think probably Roger was right. The trouble is, you know, it's kind of Hornsby was kind of like the smart aleck that's always right, you know, and or the wise guy that turns out to be right. But I like Raj. We had a great deal in common. He was a very conscientious hitter. Of course, when he was managing, fellas couldn't go to movies. They couldn't read the newspaper. They couldn't smoke in a clubhouse, which was okay with me. I don't smoke myself. But I know Raleigh Hemsley was with the Browns at that time. He took his knitting on the road one time. And, of course, that next year he wound up in Cleveland as my catcher. And Roger probably wanted all the players to excel like he did. You just have human nature just that way.
I was in Pittsburgh one night with Judge Landis when Raleigh Hemsley, that was the time of the Hornsby decision, remember? And Raleigh Hemsley was catching for one of the clubs, and he had rented a car, and there was a big excavation near the hotel. And around 3 o'clock in the morning, he's supposed to be in at midnight. In he goes with the rented car into the excavation. They were all night getting him out of there.
Well, nowadays, with all the hotels with swimming pools, you'd probably put it in the swimming pool to go to bed. I probably slept there. But Raleigh had a lot of fun, and they used to hire detectives of following him around. He'd always lose them before midnight. They never found him. I think his mother didn't wean him.
Well, he was one of those characters, but a really, really marvelous guy. Well, Bob, you must be enjoying your work for the Hilton people.
Yes, I certainly enjoy it to get around. I'm director of sports sales, get to see all the ball games, be going to the All-Star game, and, of course, seeing the Cubs and the White Sox and visiting with the club officials and trying to do my job of putting you in our properties where we're competitive around the country. And not only that, of course, the football and hockey and basketball and all the sports clubs, as well as the colleges and the universities, because they're building a lot of motor inns now in that area.
How is Cleveland doing hockey-wise? You know, I'm a terrific hockey fan and baseball fan.
Bob, I can't say that I am, but the Cleveland Crusaders are doing very well in hockey. They got that new Coliseum out there, out the edge of town. They got a good hockey team in WHA. They're having their growing problems, but they have an awful lot of fans. They're drawing very well, I think financially sound. They're having the Cavaliers that are doing pretty good in basketball, and Cleveland's a good sports town. They got problems downtown in the inner city, like most all major cities. You're probably pretty lucky here in Chicago. You don't have as many problems as most of the major cities.
Bob, I want to thank you ever so much on behalf of all of us. How about a nice hand for Bob Feller here? You guys have all heard about him, and you know what a great pitcher he is, and we've enjoyed ever so much. By the way, Jose Cottonell is going to be here Friday evening, July 25th. That's from 6 o'clock until 8:30. We'll also have, we got his best, his favorite picture, and we've made copies of all, so everybody will get a picture and get an autograph. And remember, Northwest Federal's Jubilee celebration here tomorrow. And man, what a time. Another 24 hours work for Bob Kapelnick. But anyway, it's going to be something, and be sure to attend it and really take part in what's going to be a very, very delightful day. Our guest today has been, as you know, Bob Feller, one of the great pitchers of all time. Stop in, get acquainted with the nice people here at Northwest Federal. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.
This has been Speak Out on Sports with Bob Elson, broadcasting from the lobby of Northwest Federal Savings on Irving Park Road in Chicago. Join us again next week at 11 o'clock when once again Bob Elson will Speak Out on Sports.
Summertime on the shore, and LTD Radio reports what's happening on the Shoreline Report with Joel Sebastian. Be listening throughout the day, every day, to LTD Radio, AM 159. It's beautifully modern.